Welcome to the Philharmonia Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:15 Irish Summer Time. Today is September 14th, and today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But before we look at those longer-term themes, let's look at a little recap of what's happened this week. This has been a week where gold has consolidated above $700. It's at 707.80 right now, down marginally on the day. It's well off the highs. It did get clipped in the last sort of hour and a half. But as long as it holds above $700, we can give the upside the benefit of the doubt. This was also the week in which oil hit a new high over $80 and let us held the gain relatively well, marginally below $80 in here right now, but certainly nothing in the way of downward dynamics. And there's every chance that it's going to consolidate around this area. Silver was also, just looking on from gold, silver has been a bit of a laggard in here, although that is unlikely to continue if we see gold pushing upwards. This was also the week in which wheat has hit a high in excess of $9. It's come off of that a bit right now, although it was a little bit steadier in here today. But it does need to get back above that $9 level to reassert its uptrend. And given the fact that it is quite overextended, it may consolidate at the very best, I think, around here. The euro is also considerably stronger this week. It's moved to a new high, the dollar to a new low, although the dollar has been a little bit steadier over the last couple of days. The pound has been considerably weaker in here today and over the last couple of days because of this fear that the subprime issues that are being affected or that are affecting Northern Rock, the fifth biggest mortgage lender, may be an indication that the housing market has peaked, and indeed particularly affecting the interest the currency, or the possibility that interest rates in the UK may have to come down to help support the slower economy as a result of that. I think that there is a little bit of panic in here right now, and we see that depositors are taking their money out of Northern Rock in droves at the moment. But Northern Rock has a pretty good loan book outside of its subprime business, and I think there's it's potentially a takeover target rather than something that's actually going to go out of business. Looking at some of these other markets, the Treasury bonds in the US, they encountered a little bit of resistance this week around 114 and are under 113 right now, having steadied up today a bit. But given that the bond markets are in a bear market which started in 2003, this is a very gradual process, but personally, I don't think they have very much further to go on the upside, particularly as we see spreads of various risky assets starting to contract over the benchmarks. Those spreads had widened out considerably in the middle of August, but over the last couple of weeks, we've seen spreads starting to tighten up once more as panic selling has abated. And let's move on to some of these larger themes. I suppose the theme that really is to the forefront over the last couple of weeks is liquidity. And central banks have added liquidity with absolute gusto, particularly the ECB and the Fed, over the last month or so. And rightfully so, because they were attempting to avert a financial crisis. And to a greater or lesser extent, they've succeeded, except for that area which is directly affected, which is the subprime or asset-backed credit business. Now, there has been contagion into a number of other financials, and the corporate, sorry, the commercial paper markets have seized up, for the want of a better word. But when we look at stock market performance, there is a sharp contrast there, and we do see that the stock markets have performed really quite well in with this credit problem in the background. But the while I think that the short to medium term result is quite positive for all this liquidity being pumped into the system, the longer term result is inflationary. And of course, this isn't the first time that this amount of liquidity has been pumped into the system. In fact, it's happened on a number of occasions, as long as Alan Greenspan was at the helm at the Fed, you had the Mexican debt default, the Y2 or the Asian financial crisis, the Russian debt default, long-term capital management, Y2K, 9/11, and just recently we've had this massive injection as well. So this is an ongoing effort by central banks to avoid deflation. They are far more afraid of deflationary fears than inflationary because there is a perception that they know how to deal with inflationary pressures, given the way Paul Volcker did just that at, well, almost 20 years ago. So they have been at the forefront of adding liquidity to the markets, and that has helped over the last 10 years to inflate a number of asset bubbles, and the one that was the credit markets has probably burst in the last couple of weeks. But the longer term result is bound to be inflationary. You can't simply add excesses of money into the market without them losing their value over time. And this is a secular move. And given the fact that government bond yields do appear to have bottomed, and bottomed in 2003, and are now in a gradual process of rising once more, it does imply that if we do see the Fed lowering interest rates, as does seem probable on Tuesday, that they won't lower them to rates that we saw back in 2003, when they got back to, I think it was 1% in 2003. The chances are that we're going to see a higher low. So regardless of how much they cut them, they're not going to go back that far. And when they start to rise again, they're probably going to hit highs in excess of the 5.25 that we see right now. That does point towards a longer-term uptrend of inflationary pressures. Now, it's a secular move, and it's not going to be upwards all the time. We are going to go through cycles, shorter-term, medium-term cycles of inflationary and disinflationary pressures. And when we, as I think we are about to enter a phase where interest rates come down, they're not going to come down below the lows of the last disinflationary environment. And when they start to rise, as inflation inevitably becomes a problem once more, they're going to rise great higher than the last time. So that is going to have a major impact on asset markets. When the central banks decide to start cutting interest rates, that's going to be a big bonus for equity markets. And to a certain extent, they've already priced in at least 25 basis points, which is the consensus forecast for the vast majority of economists on Tuesday. If they don't get it, we're probably going to get a pullback. If we get in excess of 25 basis points, they'll continue on their uptrend. But what we can also say is that the next time that we see the interest rates starting to rise, it's going to put increasing amounts of pressure on stock markets as they have to compete for yield with a higher yield on the bond prices. Personally, I would be looking for an opportunity to short bonds as opposed to go long of bonds, probably over the next 5 to 10 years, because it is just that long a period of time over which we can expect these yields to rise. Now, I don't think I'll be going long of bonds because in an environment where bonds are going up, other asset classes are without doubt going to outperform, most probably the stock markets. So this is a longer term inflationary environment, and physical assets are going to appreciate more. Gold has broken above $700, and the potential upside is quite extraordinary, particularly when you look at those inflation-adjusted charts that you'll find in the chart library. While $730 is, I think, a potential area of resistance in the short term, over the medium term, I think that it will be a paltry figure. Excuse me. And I think the same can be said for the other precious metals. Other physical assets. Now, we've just had a major bull market in property, particularly in the Western world. The same can't really be said for much of Asia, and particularly in Japan, where the price of property is still at a fraction of what it was back at the peak. But property should do reasonably well in an inflationary environment. However, it's probably not going to be the leading sector like it was over the last 10 years, but it should hold its own. The outperforming sectors will be other physical assets which have finished their bear markets, and selected stock markets, which will benefit from the inflationary environment, but also benefit from the bull market in commodities. And this is probably the biggest bull market in commodities that we're ever likely to see, because it coincides with the urbanization of an excess of 3 billion people across Asia, and they aspire to our standard of living in the West, and they are progressing quite rapidly towards that per capita income. What we see with the kind of demand for infrastructure growth across Asia, particularly China and India, and increasingly in the Middle East, is you have these massive populations of very young people. I think by 2020, half of the population of India will be under 20 years old, which is an absolutely staggering number of people who are in need of various pieces of infrastructure, be that indoor plumbing or their own car, depending on where they are on the economic scale. And indeed, obviously, people will want all the creature comforts that we take for granted in the West. And that requires an incredible amount of basic resources. So one of the major themes that we've talked about over the last 3 or 4 years have been the industrial metals. And while a number of those are currently in medium-term corrections and consolidations, the chances of them falling right back into those long-term bases, I think, are very close to zero. However, as these metals continue to consolidate, the bullish case will become stronger, not weaker. Together with the emerging Asia theme is energy, because while metals can be recycled, energy can't. And the fact that you have so many of the major King oil fields rolling over in terms of their production curves means that the cheap oil is becoming more expensive to get out of the ground. Unfortunately, the expensive oil is also getting more expensive to get out of the ground or get to the end customer. And this points to a secular bull market in energy resources. Now, as oil goes up in value, the argument for looking for renewables also gets much stronger. But we are still waiting for technological advances to really bring the renewables industry to the fore, and they're just not there yet. So it is a speculative industry just now, and probably the best companies to invest in are those that are actually making money, as opposed to those with a large burn rate. And of course, the other major component to this commodity bull market are the agriculturals. While the precious metals or energy or the industrial commodities have already embarked upon their longer-term bull markets, really it's only just starting with the soft commodities and particularly the grains. Probably the best performer, and certainly the one that's been hitting the headlines recently, is wheat. But when people's per capita income starts to increase and their standard of living improves, one of the first things they do is to improve their diet. And that is certainly occurring right across the emerging world in here today. Given the fact that over the last 15 years we haven't had any particularly bad crops, and there haven't been any major disasters when it comes to the production of the grains, the world's reserves are at their lowest in a very long time. This is the first demand-driven soft commodity boom. Every other bull market we've seen has been temporary because it has been supply-driven. It's been as a result of a crop failure. That's simply not the case on this occasion. Demand is leading this market, which means that Although this will continue to be a very, very volatile sector, the chances are that the upside is going to be quite significant. And you can get an idea for that when you look at those inflation-adjusted charts. It does show us just how cheap they are. It doesn't give us an idea of how high they're going to go. But in inflation-adjusted terms, these grains are still quite cheap. Of course, higher food prices also point towards inflationary pressures, which feeds back into our longer-term themes. The other major component to all of this is the effect that inflationary pressure has on currencies, because your physical gold or your physical asset will appreciate probably in line with inflationary pressures. However, the fiat world of currencies, those inflationary pressures are not going to make the paper in your pocket worth very much more. And given the fact that central banks have been adding so much liquidity and there is a competitive devaluation right now, because when one central bank adds a couple of hundred billion to their market, if all things were equal and fair, you would expect their currency to drop significantly. But that's simply not really occurring. When you look at the dollar, it's falling, but it's not falling very quickly, because the Eurozone are also adding an enormous amount of liquidity to the market, and so are the vast majority of other central banks. In the competitive world of globalization, there is nobody who wants a strong currency for very long. They're not willing to tolerate it because their exporters consolidate their earnings back into their own currency, and as long as that currency is relatively weak, they get more money on their balance sheet. So the chances of us seeing those big reserve currencies appreciating over the longer term is quite low. On the other hand, when we look at some of those Asian currencies, you'll see that they're quite undervalued relative to what they were before the Asian financial crisis. Probably the most undervalued of them is the Chinese renminbi, or the yuan. And they have embarked on a very gradual process of allowing that to appreciate. Their neighbors right across Asia compete with China for exports. And as China is allowing their currency to appreciate, there is less pressure on those other Asian countries to hold the value of their currency down. So we can anticipate a secular move where Asian currencies appreciate over the very longer term. And this is something that will happen more over the 5 to 10 year horizon. It's very much longer term because it will be gradual. However, when we look at the growth potential of so many of those Asian economies, and when we look at places we want to invest for the long term, Asia will continue to be the growth engine of the world. And with an appreciating currency profile, it does make that just that little bit more appetizing. When we also look at the demand profile for commodities, any of those countries that benefit from supplying the major Asian economies with the commodities they don't have themselves are also likely to gain. And those commodity currencies in particular, for example, the Australian dollar and the Canadian dollar, are likely to appreciate considerably. And we've already seen that their stock markets have performed very well over the last couple of years, and they're in secular bull markets. So even though those are Western economies, they are much more likely to perform in line with those high growth economies than the Eurozone or the US. The UK has a large number of the very big miners listed there, as well as a couple of the mega oil producers. So it should tread a middle path between those commodity producers and the larger European and US economies. We often talk about the Wall Street leash effect, and we've certainly seen a version of that just even in here today. The European indices were down in excess of 1%, some in excess of 2% for most of the day. However, when the US opened up and was relatively steady throughout the day, it pulled the socks up for most of the European indices, and they are slavishly following the Wall Street indices, and there's little sign of that abating anytime soon. However, one thing that we've learned from this last correction, or the correction that is currently ongoing, is that the Asian markets have performed relatively well compared with their Western peers. And as the centers of gravity grow, that are China and India, in importance, and as their economies attract more inward investment, particularly from their Asian neighbors, we could see a gradual uncoupling. Now, all depending on the size of the move that we see right across the Western markets. The Asian markets may come off, but they're going to be the first ones to recover, and they'll be the better performers over the longer term. And that is a powerful lesson that we've learned over the last couple of weeks. I'm going to China at the end of next week for 10 days. We hadn't anticipated going back to China until sometime next year, but Mrs. Tracy is pregnant once more, and we said we'd take some time off before she's unable to fly. And our new baby is due sometime in March. So we're very much looking forward to heading over to Shanghai on this occasion. I'm going to be interested to see just what it's like on the ground with the stories of food inflation. And I'll ask as many people as I can to tell me what their experience of it is. But with that in mind, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a good weekend.